This is Authors in Focus.
Hi, I'm James Reed, a fantasy author publishing under JMV Reed. My newest fantasy series is going strong. Readers have enjoyed Diamond Stained, and now Oban and Avena return for their fifth and final story, and things have never been more dangerous. The entirety of the five-book Secret of the Jewel series is out on Amazon, and free in Kindle Unlimited. Also, my satirical fantasy novella I co-wrote with Michael Evan, The L House Wars, is now out. It chronicles the war between the Harbor Seals and the Walruses over the most precious substance in the world, beer. Today, I'm joined by Susan Faw. She is the author of the epic fantasy box set, The Heart of the Citadel.
Okay, how are you doing today, Susan?
I'm doing great. It's good to be here.
Awesome, awesome.
Happy Friday to you.
Yeah, happy Friday to you. We're recording this about a week before it goes up, but it'll be Thursday when you all listen to this. But yeah,
it's Friday right now.
That's right. So, now that we got our technical difficulties resolved, I'd like to start out these interviews with a fun question or two.
Okay, awesome.
So, Susan, are you a cat person or a dog person?
I am definitely a dog person, although I've had cats most of my life. I adore my dog. I have a 4-year-old red tick coonhound named Samantha. She is my writing companion. She is my walk companion. She keeps the bears at bay. Definitely a dog person.
Awesome. Awesome. And what is your favorite time of day to write?
I tend to write in the morning because that way I can get words in. And I find by the end of the day, after a full day of work, I'm really quite tired, and it's harder to write in the evenings. My favorite place to write is outdoors. I like to be outside when I write.
Okay, yeah. That's I'm the same way. Like I wake up and I start writing, and the longer the day goes, the less productive I'll be. Once I stop working, it's really hard for me to get back to it once I get into like the afternoon or evening.
Yeah. So. I find that I tend to take my books with me to bed, basically. I dream them in the middle of the night, and when I get up in the morning, I have the freshest view of it that I'll have all day. So I definitely like to get up and get at it while things are, relatively fresh in my mind as to where I'm going in the next scene.
Awesome. Awesome. So I lost my train. Okay, here we go. So a dastardly tyrant has erected barriers to cut off the various provinces around the Citadel, which forces your two heroines, Elisa and Shikobu. I feel like I really butchered those names. But anyways, they have to step up and save their people. So why don't you tell us about this epic fantasy story you got?
Yeah, the inspiration behind this series actually comes from where I live in a lot of ways. I'm a Canadian author, and I live in the northern portions of Ontario. We have a lot of wildlife around us, a lot of nature, and the skies are huge at night. The stars are clear. You can see for miles. I take a lot of the inspiration from there. I'm also, being Canadian, it was kind of a jumping off point for the world building. I created, as a little Mary Sue moment, 10 provinces in this. And the journey of the Heartbearers, it begins with their kidnapping by the dragons that they later bond with. There is a coup that occurs when the emperor takes over the world, and in an attempt to control all magic, he starts hunting down everybody with magic and trying to destroy them with the help of his dragons. So these Heartbearers are destined to free this world, and that's kind of how things start. When how things set up is with the kidnapping of these children, basically, by their dragons.
Okay, and you call them Heartbearers. Heartbearers.
Yes.
Can you explain what that is, or is that like a spoiler?
No. Yeah, what happens is they're given a crystal heart at birth. There's 10 girls that are chosen and 10 boys that are chosen. So there's 20 people who have exceptional magic, and they're given this crystal heart to wear as indicative of that magic. When the Citadel falls and the Emperor comes to power, he goes to seize these children, and the 10 girls are rescued by the dragons, but they're too late to get to the boys. And what happens, the dragons take these girls over to their home, which is an island called Gentessa, which is through a time barrier. And there they are taught how to do mind merging with their dragon and with their djinn counterpart. So it ends up being what I call a triad merger. The three of them, the genie, the girl, and the dragon, can all talk to each other within their minds and can read each other's thoughts and emotions. And so it's for some pretty funny internal dialogue that ends up happening between these characters as we go through the series. But they're sent back basically to confront the Emperor and their male counterpart. Sometimes that male counterpart is their own sibling. Sometimes it's just a really good friend they grew up with. But they have to go back and confront these wizards who are now in the employ of the Emperor. And by coming back, free their particular province from the clutches of the Emperor. So each book is actually a completely new story about that particular heart bearer and their province and their journey to help take down the barrier that separates them. So,
okay. Big world. Lisa and like Shikoba are like the first two that get their stories told.
Right. Yes. So Tyr and Shadra are the first two full stories of the heart bearers coming back to their own provinces. And the encounter, so it's fun. I can do a microcosm of that particular province and those people that are there. And I draw a lot of my inspiration from, you know, real life cultures that are around us in the world. So it's kind of fun. I'm basically rebuilding a microcosm of our own world within this fantasy world. So,
okay. It's fun. And you described Shikoba as being the daughter of a tribal queen. Is that the word you used?
Yes.
The blur. Okay.
Yes.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about her province? It sounds interesting.
I drew the inspiration for Shikoba's story in the Native American or North American indigenous peoples. She is someone who is very much in touch with her ancestors, and their ancestors are very important to them. And her being the tribal queen's daughter, she was on the cusp of her final trials to become tribal queen when she was taken away by her dragon. So in returning, time has moved on. There's a difference in time between the two lands. And when she comes back, she finds, you know, things have changed dramatically, and that there's a lot of things going on that were supposed to be there. There's been invasions, and, you know, children are being snatched from the tribes, and she has to kind of sort through all of the politics that are happening in the land and finally get down to the heart of where the Emperor has put his stronghold and go after him there. So it's a very interesting story. It's got a pretty dramatic ending to it, a bit of a cliffhanger, I'll forewarn. But there's more plans for Shikoba down the road. So her journey ends when the book ends. But all is not lost. I'll say that much.
Okay. What do you like about dragons?
About my heroes?
No, dragons.
Oh, about my dragons. Oh, well, my dragons are very interesting. They're not your typical dragons. Let's put it that way. They don't just breathe fire and, you know, burn things down. I thought it would be interesting to take the kind of traditional dragon view of, you know, them being hoarding of gems and things like that, you know, as being just liking shiny things. And instead, in my world, the dragons, the gems in that are actually their food source. So when they hoard, you know, emeralds and that type of thing, they're actually gathering their own food, you know, because they don't eat meat and that type of thing. Unless they have to, there's nothing else to eat. But they actually do eat gemstones. And from that, that's where they gain their color. So I pull the names for my dragons from actual gemstone colors.
Okay.
So makes them interesting.
I bet it does.
Yeah.
So
they're extremely intelligent, the dragons. They're not pets.
Yeah, well, when I was reading the blurb, I noticed that your Emperor Merid, our villain of the series, he came to power, and no one seems to know how. I always do like mysteries that have answers to them.
There's a whole backstory to how he came to power, and as the series goes on, I'm slowly revealing some of his history, so people begin to understand, you know, who and what he is. What we think as we're going through the series are his objectives really aren't his objectives at all. So it's going to be a complete shocker when they finally realize what he really is intending for the world. So, we're slowly working that in. But yes, he's a bit of a mysterious figure at first.
Okay. And where did the idea of including Jin in your fantasy come from?
Of my genies?
Yes.
Yeah, I just thought it was time for some genies to start showing up. I like genies. I like the idea. They're my shapeshifters. They're the ones that can transform into whatever element I need them to transform into. With them, their magic is if they can visually see something and hear it, then they can recreate it. But they have to actually see it. They can't just, you know, shift into something they've never ever seen before. So it makes it interesting to, as a character or as a plot device to have them be able to shift into things that they have to be alive to. They can't turn into a doorknob or, you know, that kind of thing. They have to actually have to be a living entity of some sort. But they're tiny. They're very small. They tend to appear in human form like children, you know, so that they don't really go to a big size, but they tend to favor animal transformations more than people. So, yeah.
Yeah, they're very underutilized in fantasy genres that are not like PNR or, you know, or urban fantasy.
Yeah, especially in the epic ranges. I don't find a lot of epic fantasy that's including a lot of that type of thing. So I'm more so in the urban, I think you'll see it, but not so much in the epic. So I just thought it would be a fun element to bring in to the series.
Other than the type of genie known as ghoul, those are all over the place. But most people don't realize they're Arabic type of genie.
Yeah.
All right, so your box set is a number one bestseller.
Yes.
How do you feel about that?
Yes. I'm so excited to see that happen. Paul Brandt's been doing a great job in promoting the series. It's been pretty exciting to see. Just to see it climb in the ranks. It's a great series. So I'm really thrilled to see that that's starting to happen and people are starting to discover it. I hope they'll stick with it. There's a lot of books coming. The series will be at least 12 books in total.
Awesome.
Could be a 13th. Awesome. So it's a large series because I just think everybody needs to have their spot, their day in the sun, right? So
sure.
A lot of characters to cover over. Some live, some die. You know, not everybody can come to the end unscathed, but I think it's important to show that this is a world, you know, and not just a snapshot of it. So I give everybody a chance to shine in their own book, and it's fun exploring who they are.
So let's talk about your writing process. Are you a plotter or a pantser?
the age-old question. I'm very much a pantser, and I'm trying to get more rigid with my structure. I love to pants it because I like to discover the story alongside my characters, but I find that it slows me down. It does slow me down because, you know, I'm not always clear on where I'm going with something or what the next step should be in the evolution. I do give myself a rough outline, a one sentence, 10 word, here's what happens in this chapter, you know, and
okay.
Just to kind of some plot points to kind of hit, you know, just, you know.
Yeah. I thought you meant a one sentence for an entire book.
Yeah. No, I don't plan it out completely ahead of time. I have a rough idea and you know, it gets challenging with a big series like this because you have to make sure you keep your chronology right. You know, the characters that are crossing between books that you remember where you left them off and how they fit into the next portion, right? There are right. A half dozen key characters that cross over all of the books. So, and these books are actually happening pretty much simultaneously because the girls are all coming back at the same time. So, yeah, it's a real timeline juggle. Making sure we don't have people in two places at the same time, right?
Right, right. It reminds me a bit of Steven Erikson's Malazan, Book of the Fallen.
Yeah.
If you're familiar with that.
Yeah, exactly.
Where he would have like three books in the series all taking place at the same time, and mm-hmm. like all sorts of weird crossovers happening. And
yeah.
Although his timeline is a complete mess, and he even acknowledges that he messed it up pretty bad.
Yeah. Because these are all happening kind of at the same time. It gets interesting. They're a little bit staggered. Everybody goes back at the same time, but because there's the, you know, time barrier that they're coming through, not everybody arrives at the same time.
Oh, interesting.
So they're a little bit staggered in who gets, you know, who shows up when. So from that standpoint, the order of the books is as they are arriving.
Okay.
There isn't a whole lot of time between them. Let's put it that way.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, how do you handle your world building?
I do a lot of brainstorming at the beginning on the world because I need to know and understand that world before I can start writing in it. So that's the one part I really do plan a lot about. Not so much this individual story as much as what the world is about and how it functions. I do a lot of research online when I'm first plotting out a series. I will spend days, weeks, just looking up different information and finding some cool little tidbit going, oh, that would be cool to put into a book or into a world, right?
Right, right.
So right now I'm for this particular book, which is Heart of Fjord that I'm writing right now, I'm actually in the chemistry end of things. I'm actually researching base elements. And I go off into quite deep rhubarb information, but it needs, as far as I'm concerned, it's not science fiction, but you'd better have enough of the facts right to make it realistic in order for people to buy into the world. That's kind of the way I feel about it. Even your fantasy has to have some grounding to it in order for the people to make the leap with you.
I don't know if you've read what me and Michael Evan have been writing, that might not necessarily be true. We're in the absurdity end of the fantasy genre, so I think we can get away with the stuff we're doing. So what is next in your writing career? Is it just finishing out publishing all the books in the Citadel series, or do you have other projects in the work?
Yeah, this series will be over the next 3 years, finishing it up.
Lots of
writing to happen there. I already have one published series out, which is the Spirit Shield Saga. That was my first series. And so that one's all wrapped up and complete. So the new project I'm working on is called The Guardians of Legerdemain. It is a gaslight fantasy. So gaslight is to fantasy what steampunk is to science fiction. For definition. And that series revolves around a family of art history, art restoration experts who are magical, of course, and their family business is to imprison the despots of the world in their own paintings or in their own sculptures. So when someone starts to go off the rails, what is usually the first thing that happens? They start posing for pictures, right? Yeah. and it's their goal and their mission and their family responsibility to make sure that the souls of these people are captured in these paintings and these portraits as their prison, because these people who go off the rails are generally magical themselves in some way.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That sounds really great.
Yeah, so it's going to be an interesting series, because I literally can write about anybody in any time, any era, as long as there's a picture of them. So the first one starts out with our hero, who will be our hero throughout the series, who comes home from work and finds that the smoke detector is going off in that, and he goes looking, you know, through the house for his mom, can't find her anywhere, realizes she's probably out in the studio in the backyard in the carriage house. So he heads out to her art studio and goes up the stairs and discovers her lying dead on the floor. And she has been she's been stabbed. And so he starts searching the apartment, trying to figure out, you know, who the guy's still there, what's going on. And as he comes back around to the piece of art that she was working on, suddenly a scalpel goes whizzing by his head and embeds itself in the wall behind him. And he turns and he realizes that it's the painting that has murdered his mother. And with a mad laugh, the guy in the portrait takes off and he disappears into his canvas. And so what's happened is his mother has made a mistake in the cleaning of this portrait, and it's allowed this person to escape. So he finds out about his family history, because there's always an estrangement that's happened, right?
Yep. That sounds really great.
Yeah, so he goes on this wild chase now to figure out his family history and what all this is about. He loads up the Winnebago with all of his mom's art supplies and the pictures he was working on and all that. Loads him in the Winnebago. He sets fire to the carriage house as he's leaving, and he takes off, and he becomes the subject of a manhunt, because now he's the only person that whose prints are on the murder scene, right?
Right.
Sounds
like a really great story.
Yeah.
If you just want to let our listeners know where they can find you on the internet and connect with you.
Yeah. On Facebook, you can look me up under author Susan Thaw. On Instagram, it's Susan Thaw Author, I think is the way I have it set up. And then on Twitter, it's at Susan D. Thaw. Yeah, that's where you can find
me. It was really great chatting with you, Susan.
Thank you so much for having me on, James. Appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye.
This has been Authors in Focus. You can find my fantasy novels on Amazon. Follow news of my writing at my blog, jmd-read.com, and follow me on Twitter at jmdread. You can also join my reader group on Facebook, Fantastical Worlds of the Imagination. You can find more episodes of the podcast at fantasy-focus.com and wherever your favorite podcast is hosted.